New Testament reading from the Gospel of Luke, Jesus challenges a legalistic approach to religious life. Luke chapter 13. Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. A woman was there who had been disabled by a spirit for 18 years. She was bent over. She couldn't stand up straight. When he saw her, Jesus called her to him and said, "Woman, you are set free from your sickness." He placed his hands on her, and she straightened up at once and praised God. Well, the synagogue leader, incensed that Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, responded, "There are 6 days during which work is permitted. Come and be healed on those days, not on the Sabbath day." The Lord replied, "Hypocrites, don't each of you on the Sabbath untie your ox or donkey from its stall and lead it out to get a drink? Then isn't it necessary that this woman, a daughter of Abraham, bound by Satan for 18 long years, isn't it necessary she be set free from her bondage on the Sabbath day?" When he said these things, all his opponents were put to shame, but all those in the crowd rejoiced at all the extraordinary things Jesus was doing. Well, it's possible that the word Sabbath might be unfamiliar to some. It comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, that means to cease or to abstain. We hear this word in the Bible as one of the Ten Commandments. In Exodus chapter 20, God instructs Moses to tell the faithful, "Observe the Sabbath and keep it holy. You have 6 days in which to do your work, but the seventh day is a day of rest dedicated to me, says the Lord." From my visits to Jerusalem, I've been able to experience the Sabbath in modern-day Israel-Palestine. For the Jews, the day of Sabbath begins not with the dawn of a new day, but it begins with sunset. As the afternoon progressed towards sunset, which would signal the beginning of Shabbat, Sabbath, as the sun began to set, the city slowed to a stop. By sunset, there was no traffic. There was no noise. Shops and offices are all closed and dark. Only pedestrians walking to their synagogues. For the Jews, Sabbath is both serious and joyful. They take seriously the commandment to rest from their labors as God rested after 6 days of creation. They rest and they reflect on the goodness of God in their lives. And it is a joyful time. Of course, there was a time in the history of Judaism that Sabbath was known because of its enforcement. We heard an example in today's reading from the Gospel of Luke in which Jesus was in the synagogue on the Sabbath day. He was teaching when he saw a woman approach. She caught his eye because she was severely stooped over. For 18 years, Luke tells us, this woman had suffered from what may have been scoliosis. Luke does not say that the woman came to the synagogue that day in hopes of being healed. Luke simply says that Jesus saw her and called out, "Woman, you are free from your sickness." And then he went to her, placed his hands on her, and at once she straightened herself up. Well, what did she do next? What you and I would do, I hope, she praised God. Well, this story is what the Bible calls a healing narrative because of the action of Jesus. But just as important to the story as the healing, just as important is what happened next. There was a segment of the Jewish population then that embraced strict to the letter observance of Jewish law as even more important than the worship in the temple or the teaching in the synagogues. It reminds me of a line in the musical My Fair Lady, where that stuffy Brit, Henry Higgins, makes a snide comment about the French, saying, he says, the French don't care what they do, actually, as long as they pronounce it properly. Well, the Jews who were part of the Pharisee party had that reputation when it came to how Jews were to live their lives. It didn't matter so much how you felt in your heart, as long as you strictly followed the rules and properly observed the customs. Well, that's the background for why anyone would object to anyone else being healed of a disease or disfigurement. When Jesus healed this woman in the synagogue and on the Sabbath, the synagogue official's argument was that Jesus had violated the commandment to remember the Sabbath. He thought Jesus should cease or abstain from doing any work on the Sabbath, including healing. To the synagogue official, Jesus was breaking the rules. Well, we don't have nearly as many rules in our practice of religion today as Jesus had to deal with. For instance, to us, it doesn't matter what kind of cookware we use to prepare our meals as long as we feed our children, nor does it matter how we go about cleaning those pots and utensils just as long as they're sanitary. But the Jews of antiquity had rules about such things. Orthodox Jews still observe such cleanliness codes. In previous centuries, when our nation was less religiously diverse and Christianity was the overwhelmingly prevalent religion, many of the states enforced what were called blue laws. Blue laws originated in 17th century Connecticut, where the Puritans wanted to regulate moral behavior, especially when it came to what one could or could not do on Sundays, the Sabbath day for Christians. Blue laws specified punishments for moral offenses such as swearing, lying, intoxication, playing games like dice, cards, even shuffleboard. And yes, failing to attend church services on the Sabbath. Well, by the 20th century, blue laws became a crazy quilt of incongruous state or local rules. In one area, for instance, you couldn't trade a horse, but you could buy a car on Sunday. In another locality, you couldn't buy alcohol in a liquor store, but you could buy it in a grocery store on a Sunday. You can still see a remnant of Ohio's blue laws. Stores post signs saying that beer can be purchased anytime, but wine can't be sold until after 1 p.m. on Sundays. Explain the logic of that to me. Now, blue laws today are pretty much a thing of the past. Society realizes that it's unrealistic to try to regulate morality externally through laws that are unenforceable with consequences and punishments that are unreasonable and, in truth, non-existent. Within their own organizations, though, some Christian groups have more rules than others. Our Roman Catholic neighbors, for instance, still have a moral obligation to attend Mass every Sunday. Now, of course, that could also include the Saturday Mass. The weekly obligation is part of Roman Catholic canon law or church law. Just because it's a law, does that mean that every Roman Catholic fulfills that obligation? Well, not now, and in truth, they never really did. But before you start to feel smug, ask yourself, do we Presbyterians have such a law mandating weekly church attendance? A law? No. A sense of legal obligation? Well, no. A foggy impression that perhaps it might be beneficial for us and for fellow Christians if we attended worship every week? Perhaps. A preacher named Dick Donovan asks the question of the day. He writes, "What does it mean to keep the Sabbath holy?" Christians today, he writes, tend to treat the matter of holy observance casually. For most Christians today, he says, such observance involves, at best, an hour of public worship each week. Outside that hour, we feel free to engage in work, recreation, or shopping. We would do well, he writes, to recover a sense of holy time, time to honor God. Being set free from the law does not free us from responsibility. If the ruler of the synagogue, he writes, erred by being too legalistic about the Sabbath, we're more likely to err by being too casual about the ways and times that we honor God. There's a short verse about the relationship we have with worship and work and play. This verse might speak more truth than we're comfortable with. The verse says, most middle-class Americans tend to worship their work at their play, and play at their worship. It goes on, that which we worship, we serve. And that which we serve, we will give our all, heart, soul, mind, and body. I mean, everyone worships something or someone. So the question that we're challenged to ask ourselves is, what is the focus of our worship? In the story of Jesus and the souped-over woman, the ruler of the synagogue worshiped obedience to rules rather than the God that those rules were supposed to serve. He was far too rigid in his approach to the Sabbath. I mean, if his house caught on fire on the Sabbath, would he draw water from the well to quench the flames, even though drawing water was considered work? If we're to believe what he said, he would watch until the flames died to embers. On the other hand, for many today, the approach to Sabbath is anything but rigid. With our schedules, where we're trying to cram 25 hours worth of action into 24 hours of available time, we look at Sunday as a bonus day in which to do household chores that our frantic weekday pace won't permit. Sunday's a chance to move some papers off our desk before Monday morning's onslaught of more paperwork. Sunday is that opportunity for our daughter to gain the exposure on the field of play that might qualify her for varsity. Worship? Well, there's nothing urgent on our schedule, sure. Church? Well, yeah, if it's raining so I can't do lawn work anyway. But of course, if it's snowing, then I don't want to risk going out on the roads. Unless, of course, it's to go to a store or a restaurant at Crocker Park. Yes, far from having a rigid attitude toward the Sabbath, we've become so laid back that the command to keep the Sabbath as a time of worship, a time to refresh, to reconnect, and to recommit, that commandment, frankly, has lost its starch for us. But we need a break. God knows that. We need to connect. Jesus knows that. We need to look away from a world that swamps us with its demands and diversions and instead look up to see the one who helps us make sense of our lives. Some folks are so practical by nature that it's not enough for them to merely know that God commanded observance of Sabbath for our physical and spiritual well-being. They need to see a clear and practical benefit. Well, maybe this story will help. There's a story told about a wagon train on its way from St. Louis out to the Oregon Territory. Its members were devout Christians, so the whole group observed the habit of stopping on the Sabbath day. Winter was approaching quickly, however, and some among the group began to panic and fear that they wouldn't reach their destination before the heavy snows. Consequently, several members proposed to their group that they should quit their practice of stopping for the Sabbath and continue driving onward 7 days a week. Well, this proposal triggered a lot of contention in the community. So finally, it was suggested that the wagon train should split into two groups. those who wanted to observe the Sabbath, and those who preferred to keep traveling on that day. The proposal was accepted, and both groups set out and traveled together until the next Sabbath day, when one group continued while the other remained at rest. Well, guess which group got to Oregon first? You're right. The ones who kept the Sabbath reached their destination first. Both the people and their horses were so rested by their Sabbath observance that they could travel more vigorously and effectively the other 6 days of the week. By God's grace, we are freed from legalistic commandments that demand conformity but offer little understanding. On the other hand, by God's grace, we are invited to discover how remembering the Sabbath to keep it holy, how that enables us to become refreshed, reconnected with one another, and recommitted to serving the God who is Lord over all. Amen.